All right, everyone, welcome to the Visionary Practice Solutions podcast. I have with me a physician today. This is Dr. Demetrio Aguila. He is a direct care surgeon specializing in pain-focused peripheral nerve surgery and was trained in general plastics and ENT. So I'm very excited to talk with him today. Direct care is a really interesting movement at the moment. And as a world-renowned peripheral nerve surgeon, he is regularly seeing patients from 50 states and 31 foreign countries. So we're going to get
to
talk to
him.
We're
actually up to 32
now. Oh, you've got 32. Okay.
Yeah, as of this week.
32 foreign countries. So I'm super curious to hear this. And so he's a founding member of the International Surgical Society for Nerve-Induced Pain. He's an active member in the American Society for Peripheral Nerves, American Society of Pain and Neuroscience, and the American Society of Regional Anesthesia and Pain Medicine. He's also a member of the Society of Physician Entrepreneurs, which is interesting, and the Catholic Medical Health Association. And he's currently serving as a leader of the Nebraska chapter of the Free Market Medical Association. He's got his own podcast, Direct Care Movement Podcast, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, get you guys hooked up with how to find him there. But really interesting, he's actually also the CEO and founder of Healing Hands of America, which is a non-for-profit that's running this really revolutionary program called the M25 program. And we're excited to talk about that. It was recently featured in CNN's Champions for Change. And it's really a cool program. So we're good. We're excited to hear about that. And he's currently practicing in the Omaha, Nebraska area. So welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's exciting to be here. And I'm so glad we ran into each other at the SOMI Docs conference.
Yes.
That was awesome.
Yes. Yeah. And if you guys haven't checked out SOMI Docs, it's social media docs, and it's run by a gal who's just doing some really cool work, and they're hosting a lot of these kind of conferences, and it's all virtual, and it's such good information. And it's like, it's across everything from like the business side of things to the medical side of things. It's really interesting. So yeah, I'm really glad we ran into each other there too. That was great. So, okay, wonderful. Well, welcome. So tell us a little bit about kind of how you decided to get into private practice and tell us about your journey a bit.
Sure. So, I was in the Air Force for almost 22 years.
Oh, okay.
And, while I was in the Air Force, I mean, we don't think much about business, obviously, in the Air Force. You see the patients, they show up, you do what you need to do.
Right.
And one of the great things was that, I mean, generally speaking, I didn't need to get approval from anybody for anything unless I needed to send the patient outside our facility.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And thankfully, a lot of the facilities I was at had pretty much all the capabilities that we needed. So I was very thankful for that. So you can imagine when I left the Air Force in 2014 and became a civilian, there was a whole bunch of stuff that was somewhat new to me. And I say somewhat because, I started working in medicine when I was 10 years old, which I know you find a little shocking. But my dad is a retired physician, and I started working in his office when I was 10, emptying trash cans, scrubbing toilets. And by the time I graduated from high school, I had done everything there was to do in a doctor's office except see the patients and be the doctor.
Right. So you had plenty of exposure going in.
I did. But it was also at a time when, when health insurance really wasn't a big thing, and a lot of patients were doing direct care. It was just coming to the forefront at that time. And I remember watching that evolution of, direct care into the insurance monster that we have today. So anyway, I left the Air Force. I got a job working for a hospital in Northeast Nebraska. And at first it was really nice. Mm-hmm. I got to kind of run my practice the way I wanted to, and I was pretty busy.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you start to get these pressures from the hospital and from other people saying, well, we really want you to do more of X and not so much of Y.
Right.
And I was like, what are you talking about? I thought you said as long as I was busy, it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then, on the flip side, I had patients coming to me and saying, Doc, why is this? Yeah, I just got this bill and it's horribly expensive. And if I had known it was going to cost that much, I would have done something different.
Right.
And of course, I'm the one that gets in trouble with the patient.
Oh,
because
yeah.
that's where the interface is, right?
Absolutely.
Between the doctor and the patient. But I wasn't the one that was responsible for any of those things. And I finally, I started to get tired of getting yelled at by patients for something that wasn't my fault.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was at that point I started thinking about going into practice on my own because I had some ideas, and I went to, I went to the hospital administration and I said, I got these ideas, and basically they said, well, we've got bigger fish to fry. And I was like, well, I mean, if you guys have bigger fish to fry, I'll just fry the fish myself,
That's what I did. Yep.
So anyway, I turned to this friend of mine, mentor friend of mine, who's been a successful, private practice surgeon for like 30 something years. And I said, I need your help. Can you teach me how to do this? Things have changed a lot since I was involved in private practice, and he said, sure. So I'd be happy to show you the ropes. But what I want you to do first is go to the FMMA conference, the Free Market Medical Association conference. I said, okay. And I had no idea what the Free Market Medical Association was.
Can you tell a little bit about that? Because I haven't
Sure.
heard of that either.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you'll see this is all going to fit together here.
I love it.
I didn't know what it was either, and he said they'll teach you all about how to run a practice. I said, okay, good. So I figured, this is a practice management conference. I'll go with a good notebook and my laptop and learn a bunch of stuff, right? And at this point, I go into the conference, and I was in the Air Force, like I said, for 22 years. And I remember the first time I went to a Navy base, and it was weird because all the signs looked like they were in English, and it sounded like people were speaking English, but I had no idea what anybody was talking about. Well,
I
that was
can
the same thing.
imagine.
And I was like, look, I've been in the military for, for years and years and years. Why don't I understand anybody? Well, I had the same experience when I went to the FMMA conference. I was like, it sounds like English. It looks like English, but why don't I understand
But this
anything?
is not computing.
Right, exactly. And I was like, am I at the right conference? Did I pick the wrong talks? And it felt like that until I attended. I had been going to a couple of breakout sessions, and then I went to the big room, and I listened to Jay Kempton, who's one of the founders of the Free Market Medical Association, talk about total cost of care. Now, I was not familiar with this idea of self-insured companies. In other words, like when you and I buy car insurance as an example. You just pay a premium, right? And then the insurance company takes on all the risk. Well, at a certain point, when companies do that, as far as healthcare goes, it actually isn't cost effective. Let's say if they've got 1,000 employees, it costs them more to pay those premiums to have the insurance company take on the risk than it does for them to just pay the medical bills directly themselves. Okay. And so this is what we call a self-insured company. And so what you do is those companies hire an insurance company to administer the plan. That's what they call it, right? So that's the middleman that says, okay, you company X, give us your money, and then we'll go and make sure that the hospital and the doctor and everybody else, physical therapist, whoever else, they all get paid, right? And there's an administrative fee associated with that.
Oh, there's so many.
Oh yes, but it gets really dirty, and we'll talk about that in a second here. So anyway, Jay is up there and he's talking about the total cost of care to a self-insured employer for a total hip replacement in 2017 at the University of Oklahoma. Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you a question here, and your listeners are going to, I'm going to ask them the same question. Okay. Obviously, we're not going to hear their answers, but we'll hear your guess. Right. So he gets up and he says, okay, total cost of care to the employer. Okay. In other words, this is what the employer pays insurance company X. Let's say United WealthCare. Okay. Because we don't want to implicate ourselves, maligning any
I
specific
love it.
company, right?
Yes,
Okay.
yes.
So we have United WealthCare, and they say to your company, Dr. Neitzel, okay, I want you have to pay us X number of dollars, and we'll take care of paying everybody else, right? So that total cost of care from the time that the patient identifies the hip pain until the time the patient's finished physical therapy with all the durable medical equipment and all that other stuff. If you had to
God.
guess, okay, all the cost included, what is that total cost of care to the employer? Okay, not what does everybody get paid, but what Does the employer pay the insurance company, which isn't really doing any insuring? The company is doing the insuring.
Right.
The insurance company is just paying, is just distributing the funds. Okay. How much do you think that total cost of care was in 2017 at that particular hospital? And I used the University of Oklahoma, and he used the University of Oklahoma simply because it's a large health system and
Sure.
representative of other large health
Sure,
systems.
sure. Honestly, I'm probably way overthinking this because, of course, I take part insurance, so my mind's already
Sure.
going to the what everybody's getting paid, but
Sure.
maybe, I don't know, 100,000?
Okay. Try 275.
I'm
Okay.
sorry, $275,000.
$275,000.
Wow.
That's what the company, your company, let's say, if you had 1,000 employees, pays, the insurance company. That's not
Wow.
what everybody else gets paid. Okay.
Got
That's
it.
just what your company pays the insurance company. So Jay is talking about all this, and he says, now let's compare that to the same surgery, total hip replacement, being done at the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, which does direct care only, okay?
Beautiful.
Only cash patients and direct contracts with self-insured employers, right? So you bypass the insurance company, and the company that's that, the employer pays the Surgery Center of Oklahoma directly, and then the Surgery Center of Oklahoma has subcontracts with the physical therapist, with the DME, with the company that provides the implants, has a subcontract with the surgeon, with the anesthesiologist, all these people. So again, we're still talking total cost of care, right? In 2017, what do you think that total cost of care was to the employer to get the same surgery at an outpatient surgery center, okay, with better outcomes? Because you and I both know
Oh, yeah.
that apple to apple comparison, surgery centers get better outcomes than hospitals do for the exact same procedure, right? So better outcomes, better results, more satisfied patients. What do you think that total cost of care is to the employer? Oh, and it's the same surgeon,
I
the
was going to
exact
say,
same surgeon, okay? Because the surgeon, he uses the example of a surgeon who has privileges at the hospital and at the surgery center.
I mean, my instinct says probably 25,000, to be honest.
Try 15,000.
Oh my goodness. And I
Okay.
thought I was being really conservative on
Yeah,
that.
15,000 dollars. Okay, so then the
Wow.
question is, well, where's the rest of that money going?
Right,
Oh, and
where
by
is
the
all
way,
that going?
exactly. Oh, and by the way, the Surgery Center of Oklahoma pays the surgeon more than the hospital does.
That's the other
The
thing.
facility gets paid more than the hospital does. The physical therapist, everybody that's in the trenches actually delivering care, gets paid more. Okay, so how is it that the employer pays $260,000 less? Everybody gets paid better,
And the
and
patient's getting better care.
the patients get better care. Where does that other $260,000 go? Well, clearly it goes into the pocket of the insurer.
Administrative
Exactly,
fees.
administrative fees going into the insurance company's pocket. Okay, so I was at this conference. I hear this, and right away my mind goes to, well, wait a minute. How many of my patients, I'm a surgeon, right? I'm a subspecialty surgeon. How many of my patients have I done this to? And
Right.
right away, the answer comes, how about all of
All
them
of them.
over the last, however
Anybody
many
who has
years I've been in?
insurance.
Exactly. And I seriously, I had to physically stop myself from running out of that ballroom and vomiting all over the floor. I had a really visceral reaction. I mean, I just had this deep sinking feeling, and I thought to myself, I'm going to hell, I mean,
Like,
I
this
was
is
like, look at all
so
these people that
wrong.
I've hurt, I mean, I just started thinking about every single one of the patients I had operated on just in the last month. And I was like, oh my goodness, I've done this to every single one of these patients. Now, of course, right away, I thought, well, you could argue that I don't really bear a whole lot of responsibility because I was ignorant, right? Well, guess what? I'm not ignorant anymore,
So now
right?
how
So
do I
now,
live with this?
exactly, moving forward, I'm complicit in this. The way Keith Smith, who's the other founder of the Free Market Medical Association, the way he puts it, he said, you know what? As soon as I learned this stuff, I realized I had been complicit. I had been an accomplice in financial rape. And he said, I didn't want to be an accomplice in financial rape anymore. And that's exactly how I felt. And I said, this system rapes our patients.
It
And
does.
it rapes us as physicians also. And I said, I don't want to be an accomplice in that. And so that's when I came back home and I said, I need to do things differently. So I went and I so I was praying, and the idea of the M25 program came to me. And so I brought that idea to the CFO of the hospital because, at this point, I was still thinking, well, maybe there's a way we can thread this needle, right?
Maybe they'll work with me.
Exactly. So I went to the CFO. The CFO loved it because I said to him, I said, look, I know this is a nonprofit, faith-based organization. Number one, the M25 program is entirely faith-based. Number two, it helps to meet your nonprofit needs because
Absolutely.
a certain percentage of the care that you provide is supposed to be charitable, and the people that are being hurt the most by this system are the ones that have no insurance, right?
Absolutely.
They're the ones that have to pay full ticket. At least that's the bill that they get, right? And then they get
Right.
sent to collections. And I said, look, we can meet so many different mission needs with this program. So the CFO loved the idea. He goes, oh my goodness, this checks so many different boxes and it'll simplify our charity care. It's awesome. So we went to the CEO, and the CEO said, you're crazy. Get out of my office. I don't know what you're talking about. And so it was at that point I said, you know what? It looks like I got to do this on my own. Now here's where it gets. These different insurance contracts, which I was in because I worked for the hospital and this hospital had signed me up for these insurance contracts.
I think,
What I.
let me stop you real quick. Hold on. Sorry. Can you go back to right after the CEO office? Because we had a little bit of a glitch in there.
Oh, sure.
So.
Yeah. So I went to the CEO and he looks at me and he's like, you're crazy. I don't know where you come up with these crazy ideas. That's, we're not going to do that. That's nuts. We can't do that. And it was at that point that I realized, I got to do this on my own. And so I was trying to figure out, okay, again, how do you thread the needle? How do I manage these different relationships with insurance companies and with CMS, with Medicare and Medicaid and all that. So I started looking at the contracts. Well, guess what? If I offered the M25 program to my, let's say my Blue Cross patients, well, I'm violating my contract with them. Okay. And so then I can get fined. I could end up paying penalties. If I've offered the M25 program to my Medicare patients,
Ooh,
which is a
yes.
government-run program, not only am I violating the contract, but I'm breaking the law. And I don't look so good in stripes. So,
It's not my orange is not my color. That's what I
right,
tell people. Like,
exactly. Yeah. And so it was at that point I realized if I'm going to offer patients this pathway by which they can avoid crushing medical debt, then I can't play the insurance game. In any way, in any way, shape, or form. And so it was at that point I said, you know what? I got to put my money where my mouth is. I mean, am I serious about this? Or am I going to bury my head in the sand and just, feign ignorance and, on my deathbed, go to hell? I said, well, I don't want to go to hell. I'd rather go to the poorhouse than go to hell,
If I got a pick, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. So it was at that point I said, you know what? That's not even a consideration. And thank God my wife is such a wonderful woman. I mean, she's a living saint, and she has been exceedingly supportive of all of this every step of the way. And she said, no, this is what we need to do. We can't build our success on the backs of people we've hurt. I mean, we used to live in Las Vegas, and Las Vegas has some of the best maintained roads and infrastructure that I've seen anywhere. And has some of the nicest restaurants and all kinds of stuff. But every time we would drive by these places, we'd think to ourselves, we'd say it out loud. That's built on the backs of gambling addicts. All these homeless people we see wandering down the street, I'm like, they're the ones that paid for
They're the
this.
ones that are paying for that.
Exactly. And I was like, you know what? We're doing the same thing in healthcare. Except in healthcare, it's shadier because people don't know that the system is taking advantage of them. Although that's changing.
It is. It is. I will say I've noticed people are definitely talking about it more in terms of the patients. It didn't
For
used to be
sure.
that way, but like in the last probably year, it's like now all of a sudden everybody's going, "Oh yeah, my insurance is terrible."
Exactly. Well, and now with this budget crisis, I mean, not talking politics here, but both sides have made healthcare a big issue in this. The irony is that nobody's talking about the actual solution, right? They're just like, well, let's just put a bigger band-aid on the problem, and let's bl I'm going to blame so and so for this problem. Well, so and so is going to blame me for this problem, and they just point the finger at each other and like, look, there's actually a solution. It's not a theoretical solution. It's one that actually works. It's been proven in numerous markets around the country. Oh, and by the way, it's not a new idea. It's been around for thousands of years. It's the way that medicine was practiced all over the world until the mid-20th century here in the United States. So it's not like it's unproven, you know?
This isn't new, guys.
No, it's not. It's totally not new.
Oh, that's fantastic. So now you're seeing patients from everywhere.
Yes.
Yes, tell me how. Okay, so you go out on your own. How do you build this? How did, because I think that's where, I know, and you're laughing, right? But like, I think that is where a lot of people get kind of stuck on this
Sure.
idea because we're so ingrained into
Sure.
how this is done, much like you were too. And
Yeah.
you're trying to work within your system and you're trying to work with the insurances and you're
Oh,
worried
yeah.
about violating contracts and you're worried that patients are going to leave.
Right.
That's the big thing. So what would you say about that part of it and that
Sure.
transition?
Let me tell you something. That transition was painful, it was hard, and it was expensive. Okay.
I
So for
love the
anybody that's
honesty.
yeah, and for anybody that says, oh yeah, this is really easy, you know, that person is either really lucky, they're really ignorant, or they're lying to you. Okay. I
Good.
mean,
Real talk. I love this. Yes.
yeah. You gotta know. But okay, so let's back the train up, okay? So it's hard. I mean, it is not for the faint-hearted. But let's face it, okay? So I'm a surgeon, right? I'm a subspecialty surgeon, right? And I tell this to physicians all the time when they're like, "Oh, you know, I couldn't do that. It's so risky." I'm like, "Oh, hang on, hang on." Okay? So back in 19 forgotten, when I applied to medical school, okay? There were 45,000 applicants nationwide for 15,000 MD school spots. Okay. So that means two-thirds of the people that applied failed to get in. Okay. So the odds were against them 2 to 1, right? I went to Boston University. So when we were going through orientation, the dean of the School of Medicine gets up and he's giving us these statistics. He said, "Oh yeah, by the way, there were 15,000 applicants this year for 150 spots." We're like, "Okay, so 99% of people that applied to our school specifically didn't get in." I'm like, "Oh, okay." When I applied to residency for ENT, there were, I think it was 1,000 applicants for 4 spots.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
And then when I applied for my plastic surgery residency, there were 2,000 applicants for 2 spots. Okay.
Yeah.
So those are really bad odds,
No,
right?
yeah, these are not in your favor. That's for
No,
sure.
no. And yet, you know, those 1,000 of us that applied to plastic surgery, you know, at Johns Hopkins, did they say, "Oh, well, you know, it's kind of risky. I don't know that I want to do that." I'm like, "No, you did it. Why? Because it was important. Because you said this is a priority." Well, let me tell you something. As painful and as difficult as it was to do what I did, the risk associated with going into private practice and going into direct care is far lower than any of those other risks that we've already surmounted to
That's true.
become who we are as surgeons, as physicians. Okay. And so the only thing that is stopping anybody, it's fear. Fear. That's it. That's all there is to it. Can you hang on just 1 second?
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
just got to adjust one thing here. Hang on.
Absolutely.
All right, so I'm back. Sorry about that.
Perfect. No, you're good. No,
Okay.
I think fear is one of those things that we let it control so much of those
Sure.
decisions, and understandably so. And we are meant to be kind of risk averse, right? Like as a group, generally that's what you want to be.
Sure.
But yeah, I will say, like, you get to the other side of all of these things, whether it was applying to medical school, getting through medical school, residency, even those of us that have made that transition to private practice, who maybe haven't done the direct pay or got at least hybrid, I will say on the other end of that, you always look back and you go, God, that was worth it.
Oh, totally.
So we have
Totally.
evidence that it's worth it. We just still
Yeah.
get tripped up. So yeah.
I mean, I've been a member of the Free Market Medical Association now for 8 years. I've only ever met one person who went into free market medicine who then, stepped back out, but he's actually getting back in again.
Is he
So,
really?
oh yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I tell people all the time, like, first of all, the likelihood of failure is far lower than the likelihood of failure at all the other things you've already succeeded in.
Exactly.
Okay,
Yes.
that's
Yeah.
number one. Number
Yes.
two, the reason it's painful isn't primarily financial. Okay,
Oh, interesting. Okay.
so now the consequences are financial, right? But it's not the financial challenges that make it painful on the front end. Okay, like I said, it's a consequence, and you're like, what the heck does that mean? That doesn't make sense. It'll make sense in just a second. Okay, so when I opened up my practice, I was like, oh, I'm all, I'm Dr. Innovative here. I'm going to think outside the box. I'm going to throw away the box. I said these things,
I
right?
love it.
And I still say these things.
Yeah.
But let me tell you something. I did not realize how ingrained in me, how brainwashed I was by the system. Okay, like. So when I started my practice, I'm a solo surgeon. I've been a solo surgeon ever since I started. Okay. When I started my practice, I had a total of 9 W-2 employees and 5 1099 subcontractors working for me. Okay.
Dang.
Okay. And this was the innovative, streamlined approach.
Yes.
Okay. And today I have a total of 3 W-2 employees,
Yeah.
myself included.
Yes.
And 1 1099
That's
subcontractor.
how I run
Okay.
it too. Yep.
Yeah. And so why is that? Well, it's because I still had in my mind I need all these extra bodies
Right.
because
To be successful.
my whole business plan was built around the assumptions that we make to accommodate the insurance model.
Yes.
Okay. Billing, coding, appeals, and at the time I was doing out of network billing as a courtesy to the patient. So the patients would pay us, and then as a courtesy, we would submit the bill to the insurance company on their behalf and say, "Look, we're just going to submit it. It's up to you to chase it down." Well, guess what happens when you as a physician submit the bill? The patient says, "Well, then you are responsible for taking care of all of this." And I was like, "Cool." So I got the worst of both worlds when
Oh.
we did that. And so what I discovered the hard way was, you know what? Hand the patient a super bill that has on it, basically an invoice. It's okay, here's the receipt, okay, with the codes that maybe I think I would use,
Right.
understanding that I am not an expert in coding. Nobody in my office is an expert in coding. And I'm
Right.
not the one that has the contract with the insurance company. You, Mr. Patient, are
Right.
the person that has the contract with the insurance company. That's between you and your insurance company. And that's it. We let it go. And you know what ends up happening? It's scary at first, right?
Yeah.
Because you think patients are going to turn away. And a lot of them do. But in our practice, what we found is that 80% of the patients, that we track these numbers,
Yeah.
80% of the patients within 12 months are back at our door because we tell them, go find somebody else that'll be able to help you. Four out of every five patients comes back within 12 months saying, you know what? I tried to find somebody else, and either I couldn't find somebody with your training and expertise, or when I asked them the same question that you told me to ask him, which was, okay, well, tell me how much this is going to cost, right? Because patients assume when they go to see so and so instead of me, they're going to save money, right? They're like, oh, well, I'm going to go see so and so because he's
Right.
in network, so it's going to cost me
Yep,
nothing,
it's going to cost me
right?
less. Yeah.
So I tell them, I'm like, listen, go ask Dr. So and so to give you in writing a guarantee of what it's going to cost you.
Yeah.
Okay, down to the last penny. Because you know what? When you walk out of our office, you will have a written guarantee. This is how much you're going to pay. Not one penny more. No surprise bills, right?
Right.
Well, the patients go and they ask this question, and they can't get
An
they
answer.
can't get
Yeah.
a not just a straight answer. They can't get any
An
answer,
answer. Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And even though the law requires now that they be provided with an answer within 5 days of the request, okay?
Yeah.
So within 5 business days, the law requires that if a patient asks, how much is it going to cost, that you give them an answer. Okay. A lot of people aren't aware of that. But a growing number of patients are aware of it, and doctors are getting increasingly uncomfortable with the knowledge that I'm actually supposed to be able to provide this
Right. And
information,
I actually can't because you guys don't tell me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, at that point, patients, they come back. But here's the part that, I think a lot of us fail to recognize. So you have an EMR. At one point we were paying $2,400 a month for our EMR. Well, that EMR is not, that's a misnomer. It's not an electronic medical record. It's an electronic billing record,
Billing,
which happens to
yes.
have clinical input in order to make the billing better.
Right.
Okay.
That's it.
It's not built for clinicians.
Nope.
It's built for administrators. Okay. And then you
Yes.
have a whole stack of administrators that make sure that it runs the way that it should in order
Yep.
for you to have this, in order to continue the arms race between those who are providing care and those who are paying for the care. Right. And I was like, there doesn't need to be an arms race. How about we just cut all those people out? We reestablish the doctor-patient relationship, and the only prior authorization I need is the thumbs up from the patient. Yes, I want to do this. Who decides what's medically necessary? The patient and I do together. That's it.
Should be.
Boom. That you have fairness, you have transparency, you have affordability. Who loses? The insurance company. Who wins? Everybody else.
No, this is why I mean, I love not being in network with some of these insurances. And I've done the same thing. I'm making the move slow, but it is a tough one to do. So how did patients take it when you guys decided, we're going to hand the billing over to you guys doing that agreement with your insurance company? How did you have your employees approach that conversation? Or was that strictly mostly you?
No. So initially, I was training the employees. I was having a lot of the conversations. They started taking over more and more and more because they
Right.
heard me talk about it,
They get
and they heard
comfortable.
me talk about it on the at the FMMA conferences and at Rosetta Fest, and they heard me talk about it on the podcast and stuff like that. And they start to get comfortable because they actually have the conversations more often than I do.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean, the only person I have that conversation with is the patient that's actually come to the office. But so many of the patients decide not to come because of the phone conversation or because of an email, right? And so the key to that conversation, and here's the hardest part, okay? Because we as physicians are brainwashed not to think about this, okay? But the key to the conversation first is to know your own value. Okay, you have to be confident about what you can do and what you can't do. What am I worth? What is my time worth? What is my expertise worth? Okay. And then you take that information and you package it, and then you sell it. Okay. I know. Oh, you're like, oh my goodness, a doctor talking about
Oh,
selling.
this is my
Okay.
favorite conversation with
Yeah.
people. Yes.
Sell is not a dirty word.
No, it's
Okay.
not. It's
It is not a
not at
dirty word,
all.
but we devalue ourselves when we don't think about things this way. And so you gotta make that information available, and then see what the market can sustain, right? So let's use a concrete example that people can relate to. Okay, if you went to Burger King and you said, "I want a Whopper," okay, and they say that'll be $342.78, what would you do? You'd walk out and say, "I'm gonna go
I'd
down the
drive
street
away.
and get a
This is
Big Mac and
insane.
McDonald's." Yeah, exactly, right? Okay, the market will not sustain a $342 Whopper,
Whopper, nope.
okay? And the market will make that very clear to you, right? And so it's the same thing with what we do. Like, okay, so let's say, for instance, I decide I'm going to charge $100,000 for one of my operations. How many patients am I going to get to come see me? None,
None.
right? And so it should become pretty obvious to me pretty quickly. I think I priced myself out of the market, right? Now, if I charge $100 for one of my operations, one of two things is going to happen. Either I'm going to have a waiting list that's 10 years long because everybody and their mother is going to come and say, "Oh my goodness, look at how affordable that is." Or nobody's going to come
Nobody's
because
going to
they're not
show
going to
up.
take me seriously, and they're going to say,
Exactly.
"This must be some kind of scam. He's
Right.
charging only $100. He must be,
Right.
is this a guy who has three fingers and one eye and
Yeah,
stands on one leg?"
doing this in a back alley somewhere.
Exactly, with a coat hanger or something like that,
Right.
and so people are suspicious of that. So,
Yeah.
what we have to do is we have to start with a calculation. What is my expertise and my time worth, okay? Because really, that's what patients are paying for. They're paying for your time multiplied by your expertise, whatever it is you determine that is, okay? And then you make that information available and see, okay, this is a conversation I have with patients. They say, well, why don't you take insurance? I'm like, because through insurance, you don't know what you're getting. You don't know the value of what it is that you're getting. And I have no idea of what I'm going to get paid, and I tell patients, I say, okay, let me ask you this. You work a full-time job, right? Oh, sure. Yeah. You work 40 hours a week? Yes. You get paid every 2 weeks? Yeah. So 80 hours every 2 weeks you're getting paid, right? Okay. So every 2 weeks, would it be okay if every 2 weeks you sat there and looked at your bank account and wondered to yourself, okay, I wonder how much I'm going to get paid today. I wonder when I'm going to get paid, and I wonder if I'm going to get paid. Would that be okay? No. I mean, I work my 80 hours and I should get
You should
paid
get paid
X
for it.
amount. It should be predictable. I'm like, exactly. So why are you asking me to do things differently than that? If it's not fair to you, then why would it be fair to me? And they go, oh. And then I say to them, look, you have problem X, okay? You've got, let's say, postherpetic neuralgia, which is one of the things I treat most commonly, okay? Chronic pain after shingles. Okay, 250,000 new cases of this in the United States each year alone, right? Okay. And I'm one of four surgeons in North America that actually does surgery to treat this. Okay. So patients come to me and they say, I'm in this horrible pain. And most of the time now, we don't have discussions about money because, the two people that work in my office are so good at that. But every once in a while it comes up. And so they, Doc, why don't you, why don't you? Why don't you take my insurance? I'm like, let me ask you something. How much is your pain worth to you? Okay. Can anybody determine how much your pain is worth to you other than you? Because the insurance company thinks they can tell you how much your pain is worth to you. Some person in an ivory tower 1,000 miles away who's never met you before and doesn't have any interest in who you are or examining you or meeting you face to face or shaking your hand thinks they can determine how much your problem is worth. Nobody can tell you what your problem is worth other than you. I am not going to try to tell you what your problem is worth because I have no idea what your problem is worth to you. Okay. What I do know, however, is how much my time and my expertise are worth to me. And I'm going to tell you what that is. And then you have to decide, is what your problem worth the same? Okay.
That's a really good way of putting that, actually.
Yeah. I mean, it's really that simple, And then you ask the patient, what's worth more to you, your time, your money, or your problem? And then once you've made that determination, then you can decide where I fit into the picture. Because you know what? I don't make any of these decisions, right? You're the one that's in the driver's seat, the way it's supposed to be, okay? You decide what's your problem worth, okay? And then you decide whether or not you want to give me prior authorization to do procedure X for you. And it's really that simple.
I love that reframing of that for patients because they're just as ingrained in this system as we are. It's such a huge thing.
For
And
sure.
I think people are starting to wake up a little bit, like
For
you
sure.
said, but yeah, this is such a
Well,
great way to word this.
so, and here's the rest of the conversation. Okay. So I've noticed that there have been grumblings in our local market as a result of these conversations I have with patients. Because what happens when you have this conversation with a patient? It opens the door to a new world, not just for you, but for the patient. Because I tell patients all the time, I'm like, listen, I've told you exactly what my services cost. Just like your attorney tells you exactly what his services are going to cost. Your accountant, your plumber tells you exactly what your services are going to cost. Okay. This isn't a privilege and this isn't a one-off. You have a right to know that information. The law says, do you have a right to know that? So when you leave here, when you go to see your next doctor, you should demand that same information from that doctor. And the patients, basically, we give them permission to ask the questions that they've always had a right to ask, but they didn't know they had a right to ask. And, what ends up happening is it makes everybody else in the neighborhood uncomfortable. And they're like, why are you telling these patients this? Because it's true.
Ask the question.
The answer is always no if you don't ask the question. Or, like Wayne Gretzky used to say, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Absolutely. So, and that's fabulous. So, how did you, I mean, you've got patients now that are staying, you've got people that are coming back. How did you end up building your audience for this?
Oh my goodness. So this is huge, okay? This is huge. So first thing, for those of you that are considering doing this, okay? You're sitting there thinking to yourself, well, you know what? I've got a pretty good referral base. I have these doctors that send me patients, they like me, et cetera, et cetera. As soon as you leave the insurance world, you don't exist
They
anymore.
are gone. Yes.
They're gone, all of them. Your entire referral base is completely gone. The only people that are going to send patients to you are your other patients. Okay? When you start out, that's the way it's going to work. And so the question is, what kind of loyalty have you developed with your patient base? Okay. Now, for those who are thinking about direct primary care, what I've heard from most of my DPC friends is that about 10% of their patients will come with them. Okay. So you have to ask yourself, okay, have I developed a strong enough relationship that 10% on my subscription plan will help me keep the lights on until I can grow that number? Okay. And so that this is some of the math that you have to do. So in our case, I was very blessed to have found so one of my close colleagues, Dr. Tim Tolstrup, he's another peripheral nerve surgeon in Las Vegas. He said, "Listen, why don't you talk to the lady that does my marketing? She's amazing." I said, "Okay." And so she and I had like three or four conversations to kind of sort this out. She's by training, she was a TV journalist for 15 years,
Interesting.
and then decided to go into marketing. And so she said to me, she said, "Look, I'm not your typical marketing person." And I had tried four other marketing companies, all of whom said they were innovative and did things differently. And guess what? It was just the same thing, repackaged different ways, and didn't really get me much. And I spent a whole bunch of money on services that didn't really yield very much in terms of. I spent more money than I got out of it. And she said to me, she said, "I don't do things the way they do. They want to build these flashy websites and send these fancy worded messages that don't really have any impact and they don't land anywhere." She said, "It's all about the story. It's
She's not
all about the
wrong.
story." She's like, "I'm a journalist. It's all about the story. It doesn't matter whether you have a fancy camera, fancy lighting, fancy website, if you don't have a good story. But if you have a good story, then patients will forgive a lot of those other shortcomings, and of course it's better if you have all that fancy stuff, but you don't need that at the beginning, right?" And she said, "Get the stories, get the patient testimonials, get the patients to tell their story, and then people will come." And I was like, "Well, how do I do that?" So at first I was like, "Well, it's got to be the perfect story, right?" And I was getting maybe one story a month at best, right? And she's like, "I need more content." I was like, "Well, how am I supposed to get more content?" She said, "Look, ask everybody. The worst thing that happens is they say no, and you're no worse off than you were before you asked the question." Right? I was like, "Oh." And so the mantra in our office became, "Okay, if they're not pissed off at me, then ask
Ask.
them if they'll do a testimonial." Right? Again, worst case scenario, they say no. If you take a look at our YouTube channel now, we've got over 400 videos on our YouTube channel. Most of them are video testimonials from patients. Okay. And over 50% of our patients have found us through YouTube. And most of them come in and say, "You know, doc, I saw what's her name's story on YouTube. That's my story. I want you to do for me what you did for her. I want to be the next person that you have on your YouTube channel." Okay. Another 30% of our patients find us through Facebook. So those two platforms together account for 80% of our patients, and about another 20% are referrals from other patients. And actually, that 20% is growing. You have to shift your mindset. It's about direct to consumer marketing if you're going to go direct care, because you have to get the patient to buy in and recognize the value of what you're offering, right? Because everybody loves to have this conversation about cost, right? "Oh, this costs too much. That costs too much. And let's lower cost. Let's lower cost. Let's lower cost." Well, what's the easiest way to lower cost?
Take out the middleman.
No, the easiest way to lower cost is to just not offer the service,
Oh,
right?
sure.
Right? Like, if you don't
Even more
undergo
basic.
surgery, it costs you nothing, right? Which is what they're doing in Canada. Right, like in Canada, one out of every five deaths, and this is according to the Canadian, federal healthcare, whatever it is. You go to their website and you'll see the statistics. As they put on there, the leading causes of death in Canada. One out of every five Canadians now dies at the hands of a physician on purpose. Okay. And they're paying the patients to choose that option versus whatever other kind of care.
What?
And they're paying physicians extra money to encourage patients to do that. Okay.
What?
Yeah. And they say, oh yeah, we'll give you a $1,000 bonus if you can get your patient to sign up for, so-called medical assistance in death, okay, MAID. And I'm like, holy crap. And I'm not making this up. All you have to do, you go to the Canadian Health Ministry,
Oh my
whatever they call it,
gosh.
website, you can see that statistic right there. Okay. So the easiest way to lower cost is to just not offer the service. Well, we can do this $20,000 surgery for you to save your life, or
Or,
how about we just pay you $1,000 to kill yourself?
oh my gosh.
Right? So, but nobody, at least here in the United States, nobody is sitting there right lining up to say, oh, you know what? How about we just cut off all the healthcare and then the healthcare won't
Right.
cost us anything, right? So
Right,
it's not
right.
about cost. It's
No.
about value,
Yeah,
okay? But you
yeah.
can't judge value if you don't know both the outcomes and the cost,
Yeah.
because value is a function of both. Right? And so you need both pieces of information in order to make a value judgment.
Yeah.
And that's
Yeah.
what direct care is all about. Like,
Yeah.
okay, this is how much my services cost. You decide whether or not that's of value to you. Just
Yeah.
like, we had to install a new furnace in our house. It was about to die. And so we shopped around and we talked to three different places. They came in, they did an estimate. And, did we go with the cheapest place? No. Did we go with the most expensive place? No. We went the place that offered the best value. The
Yeah.
people that said, okay, we're going to give you the greatest support. We're going to give you good product. We're going to give you a decent price. And
Yeah.
we took all those things, we weighed them together, and boom, that's what we decided. Now, does every person make the exact same decision when it comes to their furnace? No. Each person has to weigh, based on their own circumstances, what's more valuable to me? That's the furnace we got is the one that's most valuable to us.
Yeah.
And it was tailored to our needs.
Yes.
Unlike the one size fits none approach that we use in healthcare today.
Right. Well, oh gosh, yeah. And so speaking of the value part of this then, let's talk a little bit about this M25 program, because
Sure.
this is a totally different way, I feel like, of valuing healthcare for people.
Right.
And it gives, it's so amazing out of the box. Anyways, go ahead and tell us what it is
Sure.
and talk about that for me.
Sure. So let's take, for instance, so what is the M25 program? Let's back up and talk about the problem that led to the genesis of the M25 program. So we're seeing all these patients. We talked about this scenario of paying outrageous amounts of money for surgery, and patients would come to me and they'd say, "Doc, thank you so much for taking care of my pain. I just wish I didn't have to go bankrupt because of it." And so we have this problem with crushing medical debt, right? Now, let's say for you, Dr. Neitzel, let's say you needed one of the procedures that I did, right? And I'm a direct care surgeon. I could do your surgery for free, right? I could say, you know what? I'm not gonna charge you a single penny for the surgery. Okay. But how much does the average American value something they get for nothing?
Oh, not at all.
Exactly.
Biggest
Okay, we've
problem.
all seen this. Every single person knows this, right? Every single person knows this. I mean, if you charge a nickel for something as opposed to nothing, that changes the
It's
person's
still better.
attitude.
Yeah, still
Yeah.
different.
Yeah. Okay. And so one of the other things, and you know this just as well as I do, that outcomes are dependent on whether or not patients are invested in their
Absolutely.
outcome, right?
Absolutely.
Study after study has demonstrated that patients who are invested in their outcome get better outcomes. In other words, if you have skin in the game, you're probably going to do better.
Yes.
Okay. Statistics
Yes.
have borne that out. So, and we all know that's one of the most valuable tools in patients getting a good outcome. Now, I'm a surgeon, right? Which means I'm arrogant. Okay. But it also means I'm a perfectionist and I want my patients not just to get good outcomes, I want them to get perfect outcomes every single time. So why would I remove from them one of the most valuable tools in their success because of some misplaced sense of pity? That'd be like saying to an Olympic marathon runner, okay, oh wow, you're going to the Olympics, that's awesome. You know what? And we want to help you. So you know what? We feel really bad because, I mean, your right leg, it weighs a lot and that must weigh you down. So we're going to cut it off and give you a prosthesis instead so you don't have as much weight to carry around so you can do better in the race. Does that sound like a reasonable option to offer Olympic marathon runners? Of course
No.
not. That's ridiculous, right? I mean, we make total knee patients do physical therapy before they go to physical, before they undergo surgery. We make bariatric surgery patients go through psychiatric evaluations before they can undergo, before they can undergo their bariatric surgery. Okay. We make patients do stuff to demonstrate that they're invested in their outcome before they undergo their outcome. I mean, there's not a single orthopedic surgeon out there that wouldn't make patients do this kind of stuff because how many times have I heard orthopedic surgeons say, well, if a patient doesn't do that, how am I going to be reassured that they're actually going to follow my post-operative instructions,
It's a
right?
huge thing when you do surgery.
Exactly. You marry that patient when you do the surgery. And so you want the patient to get great outcomes. So it's not about the money then. It's how do you get somebody who has no money to invest in himself to get those great outcomes, right? So this is what we do in my practice. We say to the patient, okay, number one, we're not going to do anything with insurance, so we can make your surgery more affordable. Okay, do it for, like let's take carpal tunnel surgery as an example. Okay, the average cost of carpal tunnel surgery here in the Omaha area, total cost of care is $20,000. Okay, for a unilateral one hand, okay, under general anesthesia in a surgery center. Okay, or you can come see me. I can do both hands simultaneously under local anesthesia. You're back at work the very next day without any activity restrictions, and it'll cost you less than one fourth of that. For both hands, and you get better outcomes. Okay. All, or you could pay the $20,000 all
Yeah,
for
you
the
can go.
privilege of getting to use your insurance, right? The privilege of
The
using your
privilege of
insurance.
using what you're paying for.
Exactly. Okay. So that's one example, right? So I'm going to make this more affordable for you. So those patients come and they say, well, doc, some people come and say, that's great. You're trying to make this more affordable for me. But I mean, I don't have that kind of
Still
money
can't
laying
afford
under
it.
my pillow. Why do you hate me so much? Actually, patients don't say that. You know who says that to me are other doctors. Other doctors say, why do you hate poor people so
Why do you
much?
hate poor people so much? You're like, no, I'm just charging what I'm worth.
Exactly. So then I say, well, you know what? We do have third party options to help you pay this over time, like care credit, right? Or there's a number of other ones. There's four different ones that we offer in our office, depending on what the patient prefers. Most patients will choose care credit. And I don't work for care credit, so that's not an endorsement of anything.
Sure, it's
Okay.
just, but that is the most common one.
It is. And then so let's say, for instance, the patient is an 18-year-old who just graduated from high school and is working at Jimmy John's. Well, doc, I don't have any credit history. I can't qualify for care credit. So then we offer the M25 program. So what do? Patient comes to me and says, okay, I need surgery X. And I say, okay, well, this is how much it's going to cost. Here are your two options. And they say, well, I can't do those two options. Okay, this is what you're going to do. You're going to go down the street to the Least of My Brethren. It's a charitable organization here in Omaha. Okay, you're going to go to the Least of My Brethren, and you're going to take my card. And you're going to tell them I sent you. Okay, they're going to call me up and they say, Doc, what do you need? And I'm just picking an arbitrary number here, 332. Okay, there's actually a way we calculate this, but I'm just picking on for the sake of this example, I'll say 332. He hangs up and he tells the patient, okay, Dr. Aguila would like you to volunteer 332 hours of your time here at our organization. And when you're done, we'll call him up and let him know you're done. So when that patient is finished, volunteering that time, the patient, the charitable organization calls me up, says, Doc, patient's all done. Okay, send the patient over. We'll schedule the patient. We'll do the surgery. No additional charge. Okay, so
Love
what have we
that.
accomplished in that case? Number one, the patient got the care he needed that he wouldn't have been able to afford otherwise. Number two, okay, the patient is invested in his outcome because he's sitting there thinking to himself, man, I put in 332 hours of my
332
time.
hours. I'm not gonna mess this up.
Exactly. I better follow the doctor's directions because if I don't, I'm going to have to do another 332 hours to fix what I messed up. Okay. And then what else happened? The charitable organization that the patient worked with has benefited from the patient's time. The people that that charitable organization, the community that that charity serves, has benefited from the patient's work. Number three, the patient got to see that no matter how poor he is, there's somebody else that's worth off and that's worse off, and he helped that person in ways that he didn't realize. So what's that do for that patient's self-worth? What's it do for the dignity? What's it do for that patient's self-esteem? Okay. And then on top of all of that, my team has the satisfaction of knowing we got to do medical mission work in our own backyard. Neighbors helping neighbors. I didn't have to get on a plane, take 3 weeks away from my family, spend thousands and thousands of dollars to fly to Timbuktu or to Vietnam or Venezuela or wherever to take care of a whole bunch of poor people there when there's lots of poor people in my own neighborhood. Okay. Neighbors helping neighbors. I get to go home and sleep in my own bed. I get to eat with my family. And I get to help the people that are in need.
I love
Okay?
it.
Who loses? Nobody. Who wins? Everybody. Okay? And then on top of that, the who decides who qualifies for the program? The patient does. Okay? Because guess what? We offer these three options to every single patient that rolls in the door. I don't care if you're Bill Gates or if you're the guy in the street corner with a styrofoam cupboard. Every single person gets offered the same three options. And who decides which option the patient qualifies for? The patient.
Patient. God, I love that.
Because, I can't tell you how many patients come to us and said, "Doc, I so appreciate that I don't have to bring in all my financial records and and my and my billing statements and my bank accounts and my tax forms and all this stuff." I mean, when I've gone to these other places and people tell me, "Well, you got to bring all this stuff." I mean, they're really nice to me. They're really friendly people, But no matter how friendly they are, when I show them all this stuff, I feel like I'm standing naked in front of a stadium full of people. Well, guess
Absolutely.
what? I don't need to see any of that stuff. I don't want to see any of that stuff because I don't care how much money you make because it's irrelevant to the decision. Because who makes the decision? The patient does. And so it's the only person that needs to see that information is the patient. That's it.
Oh, I love it. I love it, love it, love it. That's amazing. Okay.
Now,
So,
having said all that,
yes.
okay, here's a shameless plug, right? In order to keep the program going, we're looking for donations. We're always looking for generous donors, whether it's a $5 donation or a $50,000 donation. We've never got a $50,000 donation, although we would love to have one. But having said that,
Hasn't happened, but would love it.
exactly. We need the help of your listeners and anybody that they know that would like to help support this program. We would like to help these patients in whatever way they can. First and foremost through prayer. But then beyond that, if you want to make a donation, check out our program at m25program.com and you'll see on there a link to be able to donate directly. It's a
Wonderful.
charitable donation, it's tax deductible,
Perfect.
and you'll get a letter that says, "Okay, this is your tax deductible donation."
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, what a good way to do it. I know people, they get to that point usually in the beginning of next year where they're going to be like, I need to make some donations. So please donate to this, pick this. I will make sure to put that link on our notes and everything that go out for this
Thank you.
for sure. Okay, wonderful. I do have one final question for you because this is, I mean, there's so much good information in this. If you had to pick one or two books that you feel made a really the biggest impact on you, what would they be?
Oh, well, that's easy. One of them for sure was a book by Marty McCary. Okay. Let me get the exact name for you. So I don't know if you're familiar with Marty McCary.
I'm not, no, I'm very
Okay.
curious.
So Marty McCary, I mean, he's gotten to be pretty famous now working for the federal government, but prior to that, he was and it still is a professor of surgery and also a professor of public health at Johns Hopkins, which is where I did my plastic surgery training. And he talks about all of these different problems in our healthcare system, which are, they're addressable, they're fixable if we have the courage to do it. Okay. So the book I would recommend by Dr. Marty McCary is The Price We Pay. Okay.
Oh, I feel like I have heard this book.
Yeah. And so that book is amazing because it talks about all the different things that are wrong with healthcare and how we can address them and in order to make them, in order to fix those problems. Okay.
Wonderful.
And then the other book I would re recommend is a book by Marshall Allen. Okay. Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win. Okay.
Interesting.
Now, Marshall Allen, he's not a physician, But his book was amazing, and it was really influential for me and my family. He recently died, God rest his soul. There are some people, some conspiracy theorists, who think that, the circumstances may have been somewhat nefarious, because he was making a lot of noise about healthcare. He was making a lot of noise about insurance companies, and then next thing you know, he's gone. Now, am I a conspiracy theorist? No. When you start talking about this kind of stuff, know that you're going to attract a lot of attention. You're going to
Yeah, and
attract
it's not going to
attention.
be
Not
super
all that
positive.
skin. Exactly. Not all
It's
that
not going to
attention's
be
going to
super
be good.
positive. Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. Well, Dr. Aguila, thank you so much.
Sure.
I'm sure people are going to really love this episode. If people wanted to reach out to you, where would be the easiest way to kind of get a hold of you or find you?
Sure. So the easiest place to find me is on LinkedIn. You just look
Perfect.
me up under my name, or under Total Pain Solutions.
Okay.
You can find me that way. If you want to reach out to me more directly, you can email us at info, INFO, at TotalPainSolutions with an S, dot net. That's the easiest way to email us. We're also, as I mentioned, pretty active on YouTube. Our
Great.
YouTube channel is Total Pain Solutions. We're also pretty active on Facebook. Those are all reasonable ways to find us. You can find us also on Instagram, although, thank God I've got an amazing, marketing guru, because I don't know the first thing about
Oh
Instagram, and
God, I'm in the
thankfully she
same boat.
does.
Yeah, she does all that for me. I'm like, great.
And let me tell you something. For those that are thinking about doing this,
Yes.
the person that does your marketing, whether it's you or whoever else, is one of the most valuable people in your practice.
Yes.
Lisa Stark is the name of the person that does our marketing. She's our director of marketing. She has paid her way like a million times over. I mean, she is worth every single penny I pay her. I am exceedingly grateful to her for all the success we've had in our practice.
Yes. And I think marketing is one of the places people tend to worry about that ROI. And I understandably so. You and
Sure,
I have
sure.
both had companies in the past,
Oh,
at very different from where we're at now, but absolutely. And I do think it's one of those places that you actually do need to find the right people, invest the
Yes.
right money. It probably is one of the more expensive things in the practice, other than payroll, and it should
Well,
be.
and it should be, exactly. But the key to marketing, before you talk to anybody, again, you have to know your own value.
Yeah, and know your
Know
story.
what you're
Yeah.
worth. Exactly. Know what you're worth, know your story, and know what you are better at than anybody else.
Yes.
Because you can't market yourself effectively if you don't know who you are.
Right.
And you have to be honest with yourself. You're like, okay, like for instance, take me for example. I'm an ENT, I'm a plastic surgeon, I'm a peripheral nerve surgeon. There's a whole bunch of things I can do. But
Right.
these days, I've narrowed that scope to things that I do better than anybody. Okay. And
Yes.
all the other stuff that I do the same as everybody else, I let everybody else do that stuff,
Right. Right.
And like you go ahead and do the tonsillectomy. I can do a tonsillectomy as well as you can, but
Right.
every time I do a tonsillectomy, then the patients that need surgery for postherpetic neuralgia, they get shoved out of the way.
Right.
And so this is part of knowing your own value also. Where am I going to be missed the most
Yes.
if I,
Yes.
you know, if I if I cut that part of my practice out? Because
Yes.
that's going to be the key to your marketing. It's going to be the key to your success. Know
Yep.
your value, know who you are, and embrace that. Be
Yeah.
proud of it.
Yes.
Don't shy away from that.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. Dr. Aguila, thank you so much. I know you've got to get going, but we appreciate you being here. I will make sure to send all of this out to everyone.
Awesome. Thank you.